Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Good day from New Zealand. My name's Stephen Jones. I'm starting with a public service announcement. There is no way any England player from the Argentine tour could in a million years have been brought to New Zealand with the Lions in time for the only training session before the midweek game against the Waikato Chiefs. There's no way they could have given them any more notice because they didn't know what players they wanted till last Thursday. No one in this Lions team, including the players or the coaches, have devalued the Lions shirt in any way. In fact, they have gilded it. For those at home fixated on minor little country or John Bull problems, the blame and the devaluation of the jersey lies with those who fixed this ridiculous itinerary, the clubs at home, and all those people who fail to recognise the majesty of the greatest team of all. Thank you. We now start the Ruck podcast. We're in our downtown Hamilton studios. I'm very, very close to the Lions. I'm with Stuart Barnes, Peter O'Reilly, and Owen Slott. And Owen, we're actually staying with the Lions now. We're sharing a hotel. We see them in the lift and in the gym.
Special, isn't it? We feel close to it. Just along the corridor is the nerve centre of Lions Communications.
Well, that's funny because we're in the nerve centre of Times Communications now.
Yeah, we're all very close. I've been in the lift with the manager, John Spencer, with the coach, Warren Gatland, and with Tommy Seymour, who had a very, very long look on his face.
Do you think that's significant, or has he just got a long face?
I think it's because he's probably has the award for worst tour so far.
Right, OK, well, that's a bit harsh. Stuart, just before we discuss the to rugby, what are your impressions of Hamilton?
Are we talking about Tom, the journalist, or Hamilton, the town?
The fair city of Hamilton.
Well, first of all, I think you judge a city by its restaurants, and a number of us were out last night on a Sunday night, and we found an absolutely splendid bistro, so I'd give Hamilton 8 out of 10 for that. The river walk is quite nice. The mighty Waikato River wends its way through the city. Sky City, where you can go for a gamble, is a little bit naff, and I don't do that anymore, so... And the stadium itself, 26,000-27,000. It's not the biggest stadium, but it's very atmospheric. When I used to play here, it was about a 2 out of 10. But as I get older and my desires change, I'm giving it 6.5.
And the Rocky Horror Picture Show was written here, wasn't it?
Was that right?
No, it was. There's a statue just down the main street. Pete, that must be your era.
I never actually saw that movie, I'm afraid. I mean, it is my era, all right, but I haven't seen the statue either, so you've caught me off guard there slightly. I don't really see Hamilton as a cultural hotspot, I'd have to say. Not too many architectural gems, but in terms of the welcome that we're getting and also the grub, as Barnsley says, it's doing all right.
It was a very fine restaurant, Peter. You were there. There was a bit of a blow at the end, though, when we got the bill. Do you see any problem in getting this through expenses?
No, I think we've cleared that up already. And your question answers it itself, I think. So.
OK, fine. Thank you very much. We won't be putting that in then, and we'll go off for pie and chips in a minute. Tomorrow the Lions play in the Waikato Stadium against the Chiefs. Chiefs team denuded by calls from the All Blacks. The team, if you haven't heard it, and you must have by now, is, because I've said it four times, is Liam Williams, Elliot Daly, Robbie Henshaw, Jared Payne, Jack Nowell, Dan Bigger, Greg Laidlaw, Joe Marler, Rory Best, Dan Cole, Ian Henderson, Courtney Laws, James Haskell, CJ Stander, and Justin Tipperick. Pete, not a bad side, but quite a few people in this would be thinking at the moment they haven't had the great tour. And you would hope that the likes of, for instance, Henshaw, Liam Williams, perhaps CJ Stander, would be thinking, blimey, I've really got to do something this time.
Yeah, I think the players have, you know, conceded that once you're in the Tuesday side in Test match week, that you're not really don't have much of a chance of starting the Test. You might get on the bench with a good performance and perhaps an injury or two. And that what you can do, however, is you can persuade the coaches that you might be an option for the Tests 2 and 3. As Warren Gatland keeps telling us, there were 9 changes, I think, between Tests 1 and 3 4 years ago in Australia. So someone like Henshaw, you mentioned him, I think he's been a little bit unfortunate on this tour in his opportunities. He's got a good opportunity, given that he's also playing alongside Jared Payne, he's played international rugby with. So he's in a combo that he knows. So there is a lot riding on this, even though the Chiefs, I'm kind of slightly disappointingly, they're not at full strength.
For me, Courtney Laws has been playing out of his skin, very, very unfortunate. I think Henshaw, maybe, do you think, Peter, he hasn't had the opportunity? He's not looked anything like the player he can be to me, Stuart.
Well, the other thing, Lions tools are about luck, aren't they? I mean, Ben Teo, I think we'd all agree, has been one of the standout players for the Lions. But Ben played against a semi-professional team. He was then part of a very powerful Lions team against a naive Crusaders team and a Maori side that were awfully disorganised. Now, if he's not a Worcester player, therefore there's no doubt danger of him being involved in playoffs, anything, he's with them all the way through, so he starts the game. If you join the party later, you start playing the second game, suddenly Ben Teo's first game for the Lions is against Sonny Bill Williams. Who knows what happens there? The next week, he's against Malachi Fakatoa. Who knows what happens there? We'll find out Saturday, but he's got the rub of the green, whereas Henshaw has had to go out against these big guns and perform. And, you know, luck does play a part.
So. Owen, who are you looking forward to seeing tomorrow? Who for you on the Lions team deserves a chance and deserves a break?
I think Elliot Daly is one guy who, as Barnsley says, hasn't had the rub of the green, has been a bit unfortunate, and Gatland even concedes that himself. I think that there are two players, Elliot Daly and Liam Williams, because of the position they play in, could still play a reasonable part in Tuesday's game, and if they really excel, then they could flag themselves up for Saturday. I think it's unlikely, but I don't think you'll see someone from the Packs doubling up. I think it's only in positions like that where you can do so.
What about Dan Cole, though? I see, you know, he's starting. Does that mean he isn't in the 23 for Saturday?
I would assume so. I think it's you've got to bring him off after like 30 minutes or something.
I mean, we talk about bench, we talk about impact. Impact isn't one of Dan's bigger words, is it, really?
Well, what about having backup, though? For you've got a young tight head prop starting in Furlong, and you have this situation where Furlong gets injured in the first half, and you've got Kyle Sinclair to play, say, more than half of a test match against the All Blacks?
I agree with that, but the problem is, to beat this All Blacks team, at some stage, you're going to have to gamble. We can't go, what if, and take no risks. We take no risks, we're going to lose this. And on that subject, we were talking, Slotty, pre-pod, about Courtney Laws. And I agree with Steve. I think he's been one of the Lions' best players the time he has been on the pitch. And I think there is a possibility, if he has a monumental 50 minutes, he could find himself on the bench covering second row and back row. And Alan Wynne-Jones could find himself missing out. And I think that he's the bloke. Of all others tomorrow, I'm really looking forward to seeing, because he's playing superbly.
Owen, what do you think? It's a shame that when we came back into the hotel last night, we ran into Warren Gatland and had a very, very pleasant social chat. He told us about 147 gems that, as it was off the record, we can't use. Do you think it would be a shame we can't share those with our podcast listeners?
Well, let's go. I wasn't told it was off the record, actually. I'll put it all in tomorrow's paper anyway.
OK, fair enough. OK. Now, I think I may have been heavy-handed at the start by denying you the opportunity to even speak about the incoming players, etc., and all that controversy. Well, I'm going to maintain that stance and move on to the Chiefs.
You've been banging on about the devalued shirt, which isn't devalued, and no word for the shorts or the socks.
Okay, well,
I don't think he said that it hadn't been devalued. He said that the devaluation wasn't carried out by the coaches; it was by the people who had set up the itinerary. I think I would say that the jersey has been devalued slightly, but that the more you listen to the people who were involved in the logistics of the situation, the more you realise that there was no real alternative. And that apart from Eddie Jones, the other coaches, the Scotland coach and the Ireland coach, understood the situation, and that the likes of someone like, for example, Cian Healy, who, you know, arguably could have travelled down, probably would have preferred to stay and play a test match rather than come in at the last minute and sit on the bench for a midweek.
Yes, Lottie.
This is one of the most contentious things that's happened on this Lions tour, arguably the most contentious. And here we are, four of us, and I'm getting the impression that we possibly all agree, which is just a disaster. I mean,
hang on.
Well, you can't change because you're in your position. You're not allowed to move. And the way I see it is people say it's a slur against tradition, but tradition doesn't work anymore. So that's how I've had to change things. Barnsley, tell us you disagree and you think it's devalued the shorts.
The shorts too. No, I think that we haven't mentioned the World Cup. And in this day and age, the World Cup is critically important. And Eddie Jones is delighted that Joe Launchbury isn't going. You know, these are still really important tours for Ireland, for England, for Scotland, maybe not quite so much for Wales, who weren't very good against Tonga, but they're critical, and it's got to get the balance right. And if you take out three or four Englishmen from Argentina or three or four Irishmen, you know, that's tough on Eddie Jones and Joe Smith. There's a sort of an eco-balance to the game, isn't there?
There is, yeah. I think it's fair to say that the optics aren't good. You know, there was a few people saying, for example, when we heard the news on Saturday, quite a few people in the press box were asking, who exactly is Corey Hill and who does he play for? So there is an optics issue, which Warren Gatland, I think, acknowledged. But also, he's made it pretty clear that he didn't really have any option.
I think sadly, the big mistake here is just in the communications of this whole thing. If they'd sold it to us properly, or sold it to the Lions world out there 2 months ago and said, we don't think Lions tours work in their current form and this is how we're going to address it this time, then people would have understood. But the fact is it was dropped on everyone and it was just abysmally thought through.
Communications-wise, you know, it's been hijacked, hasn't it? Steve Hansen got wind of it, and Hansen played it in a way that was very derogatory, and he actually set the tempo for it, and New Zealand are very good for setting the PR tempo for things, and I think he came out and said it's devalued, blah 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 blah, and he said Gatland's been keeping it hidden, and suddenly it was knee-jerk reaction. So credit to Hansen in the PR war, he struck a little blow. But I, you know, the Lions go well in this series, no one will remember it, and that is a fact.
Barnsley, you were a Lions, so you could answer this. But people seem to think there's this charming tradition of the late arrivals on the tour, so Billy Twelvetrees or Christian Wade, or whatever. If you dug out Joe Launchbury from Argentina and said you're going to come to the Lions tour and you're going to be there, possibly to sit on the bench, maybe get 5 minutes and two midweek games, and you're still the number six lock because you're not an injury replacement. You're just the number six. Is that a tradition that should be upheld? And would Joe say, yeah, I'd get me out of Argentina, I just want to sit on the bench against the Chiefs?
I don't think it's a be-all and end-all situation now. For someone like Joe Launchbury, you said the biggest achievement in your life, what would it be? He said he'd be winning the World Cup in Japan. Now, what would be close would be getting selected for the Lions and playing Test rugby. But I think there is a discrepancy between being amongst the 410 blokes initially picked for a team and being the next 6, 8, 10 who come along. There is a gap there. Players understand it, but because they're professionals, because they realise they all have a role to do, they get on with it. There's none of this cold shouldering of other players who arrive on the scene. But there is an awareness, I think, that this day when you go and get your kit, that's like a bonding day for the Lions. And you feel you are, the in a way, the true Lions, unless someone comes on like Ryan Jones in 2005 and was exceptional.
Don't forget there was the Welsh scrum half Alan Lewis who went on the Lions tour, never played. He got there 2 days before the test match and apparently he gave it a real bash for 48 hours because he said, I've got to cram all my tour into 48 hours. So he did all the off-the-field bits, but they didn't actually play. So there we go. I think that's enough of that. And I really, really think the Lions are under so much pressure down here.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The last thing they want is being knifed in the back by their own back in the UK. I really do. I think it's shocking. Anyway, on that light note, Banty, the Waikato Chiefs, unfamiliar, but who should we still be looking for?
Well, everyone knows the Beaver, Stephen Donald, still a national hero in New Zealand, something of a laughing stock in Bath.
That old goat.
Yeah, 35 years of age. The man who kicked the penalty that secured New Zealand a World Cup in 2011. A lot of people love him. They love him in this part of the world. Like I say, there's a lot of people think he's not a great player. He's the captain. Dominic Bird is a very important player. I felt the Lions weren't given a test up front against the Maori. Bird's a really good guy. 6'9", second row. He's athletic. He's a Retallick type player. He's very good player indeed.
And he's a big bird then.
He's a very big bird. He's a big bird, and we got a quick and we've got a quick bird as well in Pulu, the left winger, reputed to be the fastest winger in New Zealand.
Pete, what are we looking for this game? What are we looking for from the Lions tomorrow?
We're looking for a win because I think although it's. It doesn't seem very important in comparison to the test match that's coming and the sea of red when we get down to Auckland. It is important for general morale, and also it's important because there's so many guys who will feel, as we said earlier on, that they haven't really done themselves justice yet. So it'll keep pressure on the guys who are picked for the test match, and it'll generally just keep the bandwagon going.
Owen, what were you expecting tomorrow? Against the Chiefs?
I think there's a lot of Lions who are very good Lions who haven't won a game yet, and that's if that's they don't want to go home with that being their legacy, their memory, their achievement on this tour. I didn't get in the test match and I lost all my midweek games. So I think that's quite hard, a big driver. And as Pete said also, it's not a split in the camp, but there is a divide between Saturday and Tuesday teams. And if the Tuesday team is A, not playing test matches, but B, losing their midweek games, then that is a demoralising effect.
One thing that we can report to everybody as well, that there was a report by Paul Taybridge Disaster, the Kiwi-based journalist, that said the Lions were completely disunited, and that's absolute rubbish. And anyone who's been anywhere near around the Lions will confirm that. Lads, I think we're halfway through the tour. Well, some of us are. Peter O'Reilly, you're 1/20th through your tour. But Slotty and Barnsley, we're halfway through. Have you enjoyed it?
Yes, this is my opportunity to tell you a tale of what I did today. Right. I went to see Sir Colin Meads.
Right.
His hometown is an hour and 10 minutes south of here, and today they had a special Meads Day. The town Takuati was renamed as Meadsville, and they unveiled a statue, a magnificent 9-foot bronze statue of Colin Meads carrying the ball. And it was a bit like Field of Dreams when the great old players come out of the mist, and Sid Going appeared, Earl Curtin appeared, Sir Brian Lahore appeared, and there was a sort of a cast of greats. And Sir Colin is very sick with pancreatic cancer. His whole family was there. All the schools in the locality were shut down for the occasion. The general population pitched up. There's maybe 1,000 people there. It was a lovely, warm, special occasion. And we've been here in New Zealand, and we've liked lots of it. And there's been bits that have got on our nerves like mad about the way they treat their rugby here. And just seeing that today just felt just wonderful. A wonderful reflection on rugby of yore.
Well done. I totally agree with that. I think Colin Meads is one of those people who kind of almost, his image almost transcends it, Stuart, like a bit like Tiger Woods in golf, etc. If in a way, for me as a kid, he epitomised everything they stood for.
Well, you talk about Lions and you talk about New Zealand and you think New Zealand, you think Willie John McBride and you think Colin Meads. And he does transcend it because, you know, he's a statue of this bloke. And what was he? He was a big, hard, nasty bastard. You know, he was not a pretty bloke to play against. He was a tough bloke and he did some pretty bad things in the days when handbags were allowed in rugby.
Ken Catchpole being a recipient.
Yes, Ken Catchpole being a recipient indeed. So it's a reminder of the traditions of the game, and it's a reminder also that rugby is fast and it's slick and it's beautifully marketed, but it's a hard man's game as well, and we mustn't forget that. Can I mention my happy moment?
Yes, of course you can.
Like Owen, it was an uplifting one. Saturday morning, Lions fans, Maori fans came together. 7,700 people broke the world record for the biggest haka in the history of the planet, beating first of all France, who claimed it, and then Masterton. And I was one of the 7,700 people, along with my colleague Sean Fitzpatrick. So I'm a world record holder. The only terrible news is, Steve, that later on in the day, I found out that, you're not going to believe this, going through my family tree, I'm not 1/8 Maori. It was an absolute mistake. The Tilbury tribe did not exist, so I'm not Maori at all.
Never.
No.
Do you know what? I didn't. No. I'm staggered by that.
We're actually breaking news on this podcast as well.
I'm not a Maori, no. Didn't get the tattoo done, thank God.
Do you know, this old toad has been a bloody world record haka for Maoris, and they like it. The only one I actually enjoyed was the Maoris doing the haka, because they're the only ones who do it because it's their heritage rather than it's in their contract. Pete's claiming he's not been here long enough, but we want your highlight to date.
My highlight... I was
kind of last night, wasn't it?
Well, yes.
That's the name of a bar rather than anything his wife doesn't want to know about.
There was a haka performed in Shenanigans last night also, but we can't really reveal the identity of the haka master. I was amused by the photograph of Charlotte Church in a lion's top, all muscle bound, as if she was part of the party. She was another addition to the tour party, another Welsh addition to the tour party, and I just thought it brought a little bit of humour to what has been, as we know, a hotly debated topic.
Okay, well, we're just going to wind up now. I think tour's entering a different phase because there's going to be tens of thousands of people coming down this weekend to support the Lions. There'd be some great hardy souls who've been here from the very start, far more than any other tour I can remember. So friends, colleagues, people on the trip of a lifetime, brothers and sisters, etc., will be coming down, and good luck to them. Wishing them all a brilliant trip, and many of my friends and our friends are amongst them. So looking forward to seeing them too. So gets white hot from now on, Peter.
It does. One thing that strikes me is that we haven't actually mentioned what we think the team is going to be. That's going to be announced on Wednesday morning, the test team. Judging by what Barnsley said earlier on, he's kind of taking it as read that Benteo is going to play in the. In the number 12 jersey, which has been a huge talking point.
It's in print, it must be fact. I think he will be, yeah.
Okay, and what do you see as being the team then, the test team? Is it pretty much very close to what was played against the Maori?
Listen, the Crusader Maori pack was the template for it, and I think Itoje has played his way in because he was exceptional, so that's your pack. Farrell, if he's fit, well, he is fit. Farrell and Murray was always going to be the 9 and 10. I think it was a dream to look at the other one. It's an option if things are going wrong, but I think Sexton Farrell is only an option. I think the Lions will play a power game, therefore you need two powerful runners who run hard, straight lines. Tio and Jonathan Davis are the men there. I would love to see Watson at fullback, but I don't think they're going to have the courage quite to do that. They're going to go Halfpenny, who will be the kicker, and then I think it's going to be Watson and the awfully out-of-form George North. But like I said earlier, to beat the All Blacks, you have to take the odd risk, and George North at the moment looks like a risk, but I'd take it.
Pete, what's the view from the Leinster suburbs, would you say? About the front row. About the number 10, I should say.
About the number 10. Well, I'll put something to you that Benteo has played. He started one test match in his career. That was at outside centre against Italy. The outside half that day was George Ford. It wasn't a particularly good England performance either. So we're talking about putting him into a situation where he's playing a test match against the All Blacks, never having played outside Owen Farrell in a match of consequence. Is he a sort of a Paul Wallace, one of these guys who can come in from a position of relative obscurity and play three test matches for the Lions?
Yeah, well, Slotty, that could be the first time Paul Wallace has ever been compared to Ben Teo, but what's your team?
I think the team will be largely as Barnsley said. The change, I don't believe in George North on the wing, but I think he'll go with that. What I would love to see would be a better use of the locks. It seems to me that our second rowers are the most informed players as a group on this tour. And you've mentioned it before, Steve, but I would like to see Alan Wynne-Jones playing with George Cruz in the second row and Marrow used on the flank. I think there's too much quality to leave one out.
Honestly, Owen, how can you put Marrow Atoje on the flank against the All Blacks? This is not him playing under 20 rugby or the odd club game for Saracens. This is another world. He's still a youngster. You have to play him in the position he's used to. He'll play like a back rower anyway in the second row, but he will get exposed if he packs down. You've got to remember, when he played six for England, Courtney Laws was always in the blind side position. Marrow Atoje has always packed down, no matter what number he's worn for England, as a second row. He just doesn't have the experience. That's a risk too far, even for me.
He was only in that position because Courtney Laws' shoulder wasn't deemed to be well up for scrimmaging. Last night, I said to Mr. Gatland in an off-the-record conversation, had your time over again, would you have run Marrow Atoje on the blind side? And there was an unmistakable gleam in his eye. And I think it's a big mistake. They haven't got their best forwards out there. Marrow, he's 20, 21. We've been saying that for ages. When he was 19, we said he's never going to do it. He has never, ever failed a challenge in any jersey. And we've lost a chance to really take it to them on the blindside flank. We're just going to end now. There is some spare time for us on the tour. I have to say, it's not very much. I'd like to thank my friend Debbie from home who sent me a text saying, are you having a nice holiday? Very slightly iffy, that. I got a bit pissed off with that, really. But everyone reads on these trips, on flights or in bed or whatever. So, Slotty, what's the best book you've read on the Lions tour?
I find it quite hard to sustain literature, particularly on this tour, because we work all the time and we have no time for fun. And so I've been reading short stories in a book called The Moth, 50 Extraordinary True Stories. They're by word of mouth, and they're all by interesting people, and I would recommend to anybody. Peter?
Well, this will sound like I'm being a bit corporate. I'm actually reading a book by a former colleague of ours, A.A. Gill, reading his memoir.
Poor you could mention my book.
I could, and I will. Oh, what's it called again?
It'd be too long. There's a library full of them, mate.
Well, I'm enjoying it. It's very, very nicely written, if a little bit grim at times, but that's what I'm on at the moment. By the way, I spotted a tour book from 1968, Lions Tour, in Jonesy's room, so I think that's what he's reading at the moment, which is very... very serious stuff altogether.
I'm using it to keep my expenses receipts in, actually. Stuart, what's the literary giant you've been reading?
Well, if Peter's corporate, I'm going to go for the pretentious call. Like Slotty, I find it quite difficult at the moment to really get stuck into a big novel and keep devouring it. So I'm reading some poetry. There's a book called Autumn Wind and an even better one called Harbour Lights by an Irish poet called Derek Mann. First book of Autumn Wind... First poem in Autumn Wind is called Ithaca. It is a wonderful poem. It keeps a man sane, just.
Blimey, the old nightstand didn't use in a much flyby, Bansy, with you. I'm reading Uncommon People by one of my favourite rock journalists, David Hepworth, a great... always followed him, and he's written a great book about the death of celebrity, the aftermath of Prince and David Bowie and all these guys. So anyway, that's end-to-end on a semi-literary note. That's it. Next week, we're going to ask Barnsley to explain more about the Kevin Bagheera story. He told us last night at a legendary party. We need to know more than that. Thanks for listening to us. This is The Ruck. We'll be back on Thursday, closer and closer to the big test match.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.